It's time for Windows Weekly, and the latest from Paul and Mary Jo will be talking about how Microsoft and the iPad coexist or not. We'll talk about a Windows 8 reader, e-reader. Is that a possibility? And Office 15, a lot of news coming up next on Windows Weekly. Stay here.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 253, recorded March 22nd, 2012. The Secret Life of Windows. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting saves you big and gives you billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchase at Ting.com/Windows. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the smoking hot edition, with Mr. Paul Thurrott in 80-degree weather in Dedham, Massachusetts. Hey, Paul.
How are you?
Spring is here.
Yes. Briefly, so it comes sputtering in and then goes away and then comes back briefly and comes back again.
Well, it is March. In like a lion, out like a lamb and all that. Mary Sure. Jo's in New York City. Is it hot there too, MJ?
It is.
Oh, how nice.
It is indeed.
How nice for you. Here in beautiful downtown Petaluma, California, it's 54 degrees.
Oh, wow.
And raining.
Yikes.
It sucks. Actually, wait a minute. No, it's now 49 degrees. It's actually cooling off. It will reach a high of 55 under overcast skies. Overnight low, 35 degrees. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 56 degrees in the city. Welcome to Windows Weekly FM, where Paul Thurrott, the sweet sounds of Paul Thurrott.
The cool jazz stylings of Windows Weekly.
Oh, Lord. We call that the Wednesday afternoon format. 53 degrees in the city. Good Wednesday afternoon to you. Okay, I don't... we might as well just get this out of the way.
Yep.
There is an iPad. A new one.
I heard that.
Yes, there is.
There is. Yep. And I got to tell you, I don't know, I hope I'm not saying anything out of school here, but before the show, both you and Mary Jo were saying you wished Microsoft... Well, go ahead.
So,
you want me to say it? I'll say it.
I'll give you the caveat.
Many have said it. That why didn't Microsoft just forgo Windows 8 and the tablet interface and just do Windows Phone on a tablet and leave it at that? Because that's essentially what Apple's done. This is iOS is iPhone on a tablet.
You know what, though? The problem with that approach is it never would have worked. As much as I would have personally enjoyed it and loved to have seen it happen, it just would have failed miserably.
What's missing?
That Microsoft is not Apple. You know, I think as someone pointed out on my blog comments today, you know, in a post that I had about an issue around this high DPI stuff, you know, Microsoft, as always, does their own thing and Apple does their own thing. And maybe there's some logic to that. You know, maybe that's where Microsoft has their best chance to offer something that is different. You know, it goes back to that argument we've had in the past where nobody wants something that looks exactly like an iPad that isn't an iPad, right? If they wanted that thing, they would just get an iPad. Maybe it is the differences that make it, you know, more viable as an alternative, if that makes sense.
I don't know, but I still can't help but wish we could have had Windows Phone OS on tablets and Windows 8, like looking more like Windows 7, like an incremental upgrade on PCs.
Yep. Yeah, actually, but, and by the way, if they had done that, they could have devoted engineering resources to making Explorer look more like Metro, which is what a lot of people say they really want.
Because it isn't.
And no, it's nothing like it. And that might have been interesting, you know, where you have some sort of a family resemblance between the products. But, you know, Windows is a desktop and traditional workhorse kind of OS. And whatever this other thing, Windows Phone or whatever you want to call that, becomes the system for highly mobile devices. And so this is an abject fantasy, but yeah, I it's something I think about as well.
I kind of thought that
when I first saw Windows 8, the developer preview, that they might be overloading Windows by trying to put the tablet interface and the desktop interface. It was maybe too much, and maybe it would have been more sensible to say, look, we're going to have an OS for that's sure. purpose-built for a tablet. We already do have one. It's called the Windows Phone 7.
Yeah.
And then continue with the desktop. I'm sure Microsoft had these debates internally.
Of course.
And I could see a credible reason for doing what they did.
Yep. Yeah. To play devil's advocate, I mean, even on a purely desktop-based system, you know, like my current, the computer I'm using right now, big screen, huge tower system, keyboard and mouse. I write. I mean, that's what I do. I'm going to be working in this environment for a long time to come. There's something to be said for the fact that a lot of the system elements, the things that kind of come in from the sides and the top, you know, the notifications, search, the start screen and the app search and file search and all that kind of stuff, you know, the charms, the application switching, all of those system level services are still Metro, even when you're using the desktop. And so that in its own way provides you with it sort of forces you, I guess, but it provides you with a way to become familiar with that stuff so that maybe it's easier to make that transition to a full Metro environment when you're using a tablet. And maybe going back and forth between the two won't be as hard as it might otherwise have been, right, if they had just done a completely different system. Because, you know, the other system would have competed with Windows. And it might have diluted the brand. And you know, I think we can all understand the basic arguments that Microsoft must have made to justify the decision that it did make.
Unified. You know? Unified.
Microsoft they say tablets are PCs, right?
Right.
They don't want you to think of these as not being PCs.
That may be where they've gone wrong.
Yeah.
To be honest. That may be overdoing it.
I noticed in that most recent post, you know, Microsoft goes to great pains with language, actually. And it's something to pay attention to in those blog posts. They talk about Windows devices a lot. But in that most recent post, I'm not saying that I don't know that the phrase Windows device doesn't appear in it, but they talked about Windows PCs again, you know, and it was the first time in a while that I kind of noticed it where, you know, it was like they were talking about PCs. And I think they were trying to draw a distinction between a lot of different things. I mean, big screen devices, which you would typically see obviously on a desktop computer, a PC, and then small screen devices that maybe have high DPI or PPI, depending on how you think of it, you know, a very dense display of pixels, but on a smaller form factor, which would be like a device, you know, like the iPad, the new iPad, obviously is a high DPI type display.
Anand says that they're actually talking about high res displays, right?
Yeah, that's the post we're talking about. There's a new post on building Windows 8 that came out this week.
Oh, that's the Sinofsky post. Okay.
Yep, the Sinofsky post about... They don't say this in the headline, but it's like, hey, we can do Retina displays too. That's kind of what that post is.
Revealed this earlier. I mean, they talked about this at Build. And I wrote a post last week when the iPad 3 came out, the new iPad, that comparing it to Windows 8, you know, where's the biggest area of advantage for the iPad over Windows 8? And I actually do think it's the display. And the reasons are many, but to just kind of boil it down, you know, Apple makes an iPad and it has a display, and now everyone targets that. So everything will be beautiful and seamless and it will always work the same. Apple also did something which I think is appropriate for the device, where even though the display has four times as many pixels, the start screen is not tiny little boxes. You know, it's the same exact thing. So if you were to load a web page in the browser on that machine, it doesn't look tiny. It fills the screen just like it did before.
Right.
And if you put it next to an iPad 2, they look the same. It's just that the new one is sharper. And I think for that kind of device, that was the right approach. The post that you're scrolling through talks about the flow aspects they have, these capabilities they have where the same app can flow differently depending on the orientation of the display and also the size of the display.
And this is something you need to solve. But this is different from what you're talking about?
Well, no. It's a different approach is what I guess what I'm saying. And we'll see. I mean, it's a 1.0 thing. That's the problem. Microsoft is coming at this for the first time. The other thing is that Windows has another environment called the desktop. And the way that the desktop handles scaling is very different and horribly inferior, by the way. You know, one of the nice things about Mac OS X, even though it is still a bitmap-based display, is that Apple has always done a good job of making very large interface elements so that as you scale them up, they look beautiful no matter how big your screen is and how, you know, big you make things. Whereas anyone who's done that in Windows knows it looks terrible. I mean, if you have a high-res laptop, for example, and you think, wow, I can't see any of the icons, they're so small, I'll bump it up. And you bump it up to like 125%, and it looks terrible.
Right.
You know, every time. I mean, it's one of those awful things where neither one of them is right. And I don't, well, I know. I mean, that's not something they're going to fix in Windows 8. So, you know, for those of us on the desktop, the, you know, 1 point whatever billion people, that's not getting any better in Windows 8. And so I'm glad they're making those moves on the other side, but I still think that's a major area of concern, because we are heading toward a future, obviously, of very high density displays.
I'm curious.
But we don't really know. We don't know how any of this is going to look, really, because they're telling us how many high resolution displays they're going to be out there and what the resolutions are going to be. But we don't know these because we can't see any of the hardware, so we don't really know how it's going to work.
Well, and the other thing is they're targeting 1366 by 768 is sort of what I think of as the reference platform for any app.
Yeah.
Or for any device, you know, so you're always going to be looking at it to look on that display resolution. Very common today in, say, like a 13-inch notebook computer for that to be the resolution. That's great, but that's, you know, that's not what Apple does. Apple comes and they release this device this year that has some insane resolution, and they've just raised the bar. And so here we are toiling away to release an OS that's going to come out in the fall, hopefully, that targets last year's displays. And, you know, they have to do that for backwards compatibility purposes and so forth. They have a much larger market to serve. But see, that's the dual-edged nature of Windows, right? You are humongous. You tack everything onto Windows, but then you also have to make sure that it just works for basically everybody. And that's not what Apple does, right? I mean, that's the differences in those two approaches. Apple throws away the old thing, and they just do something new.
It also feels like Apple's doing one thing at a time, kind of.
Sure.
It feels like Windows is fighting a war on 100 fronts. Microsoft is, and that's difficult.
Well, yeah.
As a student of World War II, the Germans were unable to fight on two fronts. And I think that it's right. Generally considered a good idea to fight on one front. Not only that, Apple's got the high ground because they're three years ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem is Microsoft is actually facing Apple in both of those other fronts, right?
I mean, I know
it's like the iPad, which is the target, you know, the tablet market, which means the iPad,
right?
And then there's the Mac, which is the only other viable contender on the desktop.
Yeah, but nobody's fighting the Mac. Who needs to fight the Mac?
Well,
the Mac is the Mac is Mussolini. The Mac is just your funny little Italian friend.
All right, so they're fighting previous versions of Windows then, plus the Mac.
That's more like it.
Yeah.
You know,
I did not violate Godwin's law. I'm not saying Microsoft is Nazis. I'm not saying that. I'm saying we have learned from the history of warfare, and because Paul Thurrott is a great student of World War II, I'm just trying to put it in terms that
Germany could have defeated the Soviet Union. Actually, the biggest mistake they ever made was declaring war unnecessarily in the United States. But let's not get into World War II right
you
now.
You see what I'm saying? You see where I'm going?
Your point stands. The point stands.
Not to mention the Russian winter, and then, you know.
Sure.
So, no, I think it's fascinating, and I wonder if, here's what I would predict, that in the next few months, Microsoft's going to keep its ear to the ground and be listening to rumblings from the enterprise side. And I almost feel like this talking about this return to talking about PCs is the beginning of a little bit of a retrenching from Microsoft on the tablet thing and interface and all of that, because to reassure enterprise,
yeah,
right, that we're not going to make a massive change here.
I think they must have had that conversation a long time ago, though, right? In other words,
but I think that
when
they
the iPad
know.
Came out. But I think a lot of companies went to Microsoft a year ago or a year and a half ago and said, hey, a lot of our employees are looking for these iPad things. We don't like them because they're not highly manageable. Are you going to make an iPad? You know, and Microsoft, you know, arguably you could say the path to least resistance for Microsoft was to make Windows into a tablet because
really,
Windows is
you think that enterprise is calling, is saying, we like these, we want more of these?
No, they do not like them. But they're saying, we feel like these things are inevitable.
Ah,
and
can't help it.
If they have to happen, We want it to be something that we can manage.
We fought the iPhone and we lost.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
So let's not have the same thing happen on the
desktop. There's a real acceptance of this consumerism of IT thing. I think that consumerization of IT.
Right.
That it doesn't mean they're embracing it necessarily. Some probably are. But I think for a lot of companies, it's just they're resigned to it.
The CEO comes in and says, you know, these things are great. We ought to have more of these things. And the IT department's going,
Yeah, exactly.
How do I create a build?
That's what I want. I want an $800 slab of glass and plastic that someone could leave in a cab. Thanks.
Yeah. How do we make it secure? How do we standardize it? All sorts of how do we manage it? All sorts of things. You
know, I don't know. Sure. I still don't think, though, that Microsoft's really thinking first and foremost about what the enterprise cares about with Windows 8.
Really? Why not?
I think I keep feeling like this is what they're doing with Windows Phone, right? Like when they made the first version of Windows Phone, they made it consciously into a product for consumers, pitched it to consumers, made sure the apps that were available were for consumers. And now I feel like this is where they're going with Windows 8. If you look at the apps that are the demo apps, it's like Cut the Rope and a cookbook. You don't really see them talking about ERP on Windows 8. Although I will say they did demo this week their own ERP, like a sample version of what it could look like on Windows 8. But that's like a 2013, 2014 thing in their minds. So I think initially the focus of Windows 8 is consumers. And I think as they go forward and add service packs or service the operating system in whatever way it ends up being serviced, that it'll become more friendly to the enterprise. But I really don't think that's the group of people they thought of when they developed this. Do you,
Paul? What you just said is right. It's absolutely right. I think that for Microsoft, one of the responses they can give to the enterprise is like, you already have this thing that works great. If you can't use a tablet for whatever reason, we have PCs today and they work great. So we have some evolutionary improvements. You can roll out Windows 8 and Windows 7 side by side in your enterprise. You can roll out Windows 7. We couldn't care less. Just keep buying Windows, please. And we don't care which one it is. And that's fine because, you know, as we've said in the past, I think, you know, as far as the markets where Windows was kind of lagging behind, I mean, the consumer market is the clear one. I mean, the business stuff is right there. All the manageability stuff has been there for a long time. It works great. So, yeah, absolutely.
And the one that they are focusing on the enterprise, the tablet that they will try to sell to the enterprise is the x86 version. It's not the ARM version. I think to them is totally a consumer play. And I'll be surprised if they do much of anything at all to push that form factor to business users.
Though they won't want them anyway because they're just Exchange Active Sync. I mean, they're not highly manageable devices.
You can't run desktop apps on those.
Yep.
So,
I mean, I suppose for forward-leaning places that don't have any legacy app requirements other than, say, on a website or something that, you know, maybe those would be okay. And that would be probably a cheaper and less expensive to manage kind of device. But I don't think WoWA devices are going to make any inroads with businesses at all.
Moving along. I think we've terminated this conversation here.
It's been terminated.
It's over. Thank you, citizens.
Well, we did not mention the Microsoft internal ban on purchases of iPads.
What?
This was kind of a funny little story this week.
That's a bummer, right? This is the same guy who stomped on an iPhone, right?
So I don't know if it was Ballmer or if it's more like Kevin Turner, who's the COO, who's behind this, but supposedly, based on a memo somebody forwarded me, they've decided no longer can their sales and marketing teams use corporate funds to buy iPads or Macs.
See, this mirrors the conversation that's going on in enterprises all over the country.
It is, right.
They're eating their own dog food.
You don't, the one group at Microsoft you don't want out there sales. With iPads and Macs is your sales force, right?
Oh, my God, of course. Actually, this
is
a problem
in
my company.
You don't want to go to a customer and have an iPad. I'd like to show you
Microsoft's new strategy on this.
Exactly. Using Keynote. You know, a lot of the people I work with also want iPads, or some of them have iPads. And, you know, the argument I keep having these people is like, guys, we work at a Windows publication here. What you're doing is stupid.
You made your bed. And it, now you got to sleep in it.
It's just, yeah. And,
thank goodness there's so many Windows on ARM tablets out there so that they can choose from some really wonderful devices.
So that is, the of course, the catch-22 of this decision.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hmm.
Well, but you know what? I can't argue with this. I mean,
no, they have to.
You can use a laptop. Deal with it.
And they're saying, they're saying the outside guys. They're not saying, I mean, obviously programmers and everybody else is probably, taking these things apart.
The CEO of Ford does not drive a Toyota.
Actually, he does.
Yikes.
I asked Alan Mulally. He says, I never drive Fords. I drive everybody else's cars because I have to know the competition.
So you've met this guy.
Yeah. Oh, I know Alan very well. Yeah, he's a good
you
friend.
You have to tell him that I idolize this man.
He's one of the great CEOs in this country. And I don't know if people know this. There's a new book about him that is incredible.
Oh, good. Because I read about him in a number of other books about the auto industry. But he was at Boeing previous, right?
Yep.
They brought him in. That guy's amazing.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And I can say, people are saying, oh, you're bragging, you're name dropping. No, Alan kissed me the last time I saw him on the cheek, but kissed me. So I think that counts as, like, I think he knows who I am, unless he kisses strangers a lot. He's a very friendly fellow. Wow. No, every time I talk to him, I am blown away by his intelligence, his integrity, and his vision. And he really, it's a values-driven company, which I find very interesting. And I think that that's unusual in big, big companies. And he really is doing that. Anyway, how did we get off on that?
Oh,
you were saying the CEO of Ford wouldn't drive another person's car. But in fact, that's exactly why he does, because it's important that he knows what's out there. But I'm sure Steve Ballmer tries other stuff, although I know Bill Gates would not let his kids buy iPhones or iPads. Didn't Melinda say that? We're not allowed to own Apple products?
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe not.
All I can say is the Windows 18 better be using iPads right now.
Yeah,
they
better be looking hard.
The operating system better be, because that's who you're competing with. And I bet they are. And I mean, the other team, of course, it's using them as a team supposedly developing Office for the iPad, right? I mean, what are you going to do there?
Right.
Not use them?
No.
No, this is sales and marketing. This is the group called SMS&G at Microsoft. So it's like 40,000 people. It's a huge group, but still.
No, it makes sense. The outside guys should not be carrying iPads or Macintoshes. That just does not send the right signal. You want to send the signal. Anything you can do with an Apple, you can do better with a Microsoft product.
Yeah.
That, I mean, obviously. You don't see the Ricoh copier guy carrying around Xerox products. Maybe he should.
It's kind of heavy.
Are we done with the iPad? I don't want to rush you or anything.
No, I think we're done.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. We come back and talk more. We are talking Windows. I'm sorry, there was a little Apple interlude there, but you have to. That's the big story, and I think it is important as Microsoft moves to Windows 8 to look at what's going on. And no, I did not kiss him back. So
I would have kissed him back.
I hugged him, really. I gave him a manly hug.
Right.
A bro hug. Let's talk about Ting. Here's another guy I would kiss. I'm so happy. Elliot Noss, who is the CEO of TwoCows. TwoCows, of course, is the creator of Hover.com. They are there. This is a brilliant company that is designing its products to once again kind of reinvent businesses. If you're really a really good CEO, that's one of the things you do. How can we take a business? This is what Steve Jobs did. How can we take the music business, reinvent it? They're now looking how to take the TV business and reinvent it. Elliot said, how do we take the cell phone business and reinvent it? This thing sucks. Cell carriers are the most hated people in the world. What can we do better? And he created Ting. First of all, great name, TING.com. The idea of Ting is to provide you with a cell plan that actually works for you. What a novelty in this day of ETFs and two-year lock-ins and, you pay for stuff you never use. Ting uses a Sprint, so if it's a Sprint MVNO, so if you have good Sprint coverage, and most of us do, especially good data, then you're going to like this. But here's the key with Ting. Here's the Ting thing. You will love. They've got some great devices. They're all Android. I'm sorry. They don't have a Windows phone yet. But I am going to work on Elliot to get one. In a couple of weeks, they're going to get the Samsung Galaxy S2 4G. This is my favorite phone on Sprint. This is such a good phone. Sprint calls it their Epic Touch 4G. It's essentially the same phone. This is the one I'd recommend. Now, notice the prices are a little higher because they are not subsidizing these with locking you into 2 years. Look at the plans and you'll see what I mean. So they sell minutes, messages, and megabytes separately. Now, you might say, oh, I want to bundle them. No, you don't. You want to unbundle them because everybody uses it differently. Some people use a lot of minutes, a lot of text messages, but no data. Most of us use very few minutes, a medium amount of text messages, and lots of data. So pick the size plan you want. Pick how many devices you want. This is why it's great for small business. All the way up to 20 devices, you pay $6 per device, period, per month. And, of course, you always get free voicemail, picture and video messaging, three-way calling, caller ID, tethering and hotspot, and a lot more. That's free. But here's the beauty part. So now I've got, let's make it two phones. I'm going to have 100 minutes, because I hardly ever call, 1,000 text messages, 3 gigabytes. That's $80 a month for three phones, by the way. If I use less, they refund me the money at the end of the month. If I use more, they charge me a very reasonable rate, basically the same rate that I'm already paying for. They move me up to the next plan. So you never get hit by a huge fee, and you never pay more than you need. This is Ting. Pay for what you use. No penalties for using more. No waste for using less. 4G phones. A great website that'll tell you exactly how much you save. Go use the Spring the Ting calculator. Spring, the Ting calculator, and you'll save $50 on your device purchase when you go to ting.com/windows. So this is the device I recommend if you want the high end device. This is nice because originally when they started this, they didn't have all of the high end devices. Now they've got the best Android phone out there, the Galaxy S2. This is such a great phone. $465, but when you go to ting.com/windows, take $50 off that, right? They've got other devices, too. You can save even more. I am a big fan. Elliot is reinventing the cell phone business. I get tweets all the time. Here's one that came in last month. My Ting for the win, Ting FTW is their Twitter handle, phone bill was $22 last month. That's $100 less than AT&T. You're going to have similar savings. I'm telling you, you're going to love this. Here's an actual usage case. Family of four, four phones, 2,387 minutes, four, obviously teenagers in the family, 4,227 messages, a half a gig of data. My cost for all of that, $244 on including taxes and junk fees. That was on I guess AT&T, doesn't say. On Ting, $103 a month. That's $140 in savings. A marketing firm in Boston with six people says, six people together, we saved $12,000 a year for our business. No wait customer support. That's what Elliot's famous for, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern time. A blog. They've got Twitter. They've got lots of information. They're run by geeks, so you know they're going to do it right. Ting.com/windows. Just check it out. And I'm sorry they don't have a Windows phone, Paul. I apologize, but I'm gonna talk to Elliot and see.
I was going to hold my breath until I got one, but.
This is such a good deal. I have a Ting phone. Actually, you know what I did with my Ting phone? I love it. But I have every carrier. I have to because I review them all. And Jolie O'Dell from, I can't remember, was here. And she doesn't have a phone. I said, look, try the Ting phone for a month. I'm on me. I don't think I'm ever going to see it again. I think it's gone. VentureBeat, thank you. She didn't have a phone. I said, well, come on. Well, you got to have a phone. How can you cover technology without a cell phone? So now she has a Ting phone. All right, moving right along. Let me go back to our, where did I put it? I have too many screens open here. Item number two in our conversation. Will they or won't they? E-reader for Windows 8? What, are you crazy? Whose idea was this? Is this yours, Mary Jo? Is this all yours?
It's mine, but it's not my idea.
If someone
Windows 8 reader is not my idea.
Yeah, whose idea?
Don't blame me. So this is weird. This keeps coming up over and over. Kevin Turner, again, who we mentioned
previously. Are you talking like e-ink? Or like a Kindle Fire?
I'll give you his exact quote, and you guys say what you think is going on here. So he was, Kevin Turner, COO, speaking at Convergence this week, and he has said this before. He said Microsoft's going to be the first company on the planet to have a consistent UI, meaning Metro, yeah. from the smartphone to the tablet to the slate to the reader to the TV. Okay, where's this reader coming from? Huh? Like who's building this thing? And so everybody's
this is
now
what happens
like,
when you let the marketing people out into the world, you know?
A unified ecosystem enhanced by Microsoft Cloud Services. This is just the 21st century of Windows everywhere, right?
But see the reader on there?
Yeah, look at it. It's between a slate and a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet they're counting on third parties to make simple Windows devices that many people will just use for reading. I can't imagine.
They're looking at the Amazon Fire, Kindle Fire, which runs on Android but never says the word Android or Google anywhere.
Not Windows Reader Edition?
Oh, please, no. No.
Can you imagine?
No.
It's just like Windows, except you can't create anything with it.
No.
You know?
And so, okay, he never did say Windows 8. And so some people are like, maybe this is going to be one of those Windows embedded things with a Metro UI. Right. I'm like, oh, man, that would be equally confusing, right? Other people think maybe it's just like a really high-level way of them saying, we're going to have the Kindle app on Windows tablets. I don't know what it is, but it keeps coming up. It's not going away, and nobody can figure out what this thing is or who's building it or when it's going to show up.
Where and when did he say this most recently?
Convergence.
He just said it this week at Convergence.
This slide is like the Rosetta Stone of Microsoft.
That slide isn't from this week. That slide is from when he said it before, which was Partner Show in 2011. So he has said this before and keeps reiterating the idea that there will be a reader with a Metro interface.
I think this is their mission statement. Our future is a unified ecosystem enhanced by Microsoft Cloud Services. The next line is Office 365, Windows Live. These are the services. Office 365, Windows Live, Bing, Zune, Xbox Live. They've kind of merged those, though, right? Skype, Explorer 9.
Desktop, laptop, smartphone/music.
Smartphone, music, TV.
User
interface,
funny that music
mouse, keyboard, pen, handwriting, thing. Touch, remote.
Yeah.
I honestly think it makes more sense for them to make a dedicated music device than a dedicated e-reader. But
well, they did that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it worked out great.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I think they tried accomplished,
Leo.
I know. A lot of people say, oh, so you're holding up an old slide and saying they still think this. Well, they said it again this week. They still think this. This is an older slide from last year, but they still think this is the vision and this e-reader thing is coming, supposedly.
And you're saying that Bill Hill, who was a clear type guy and is an e-reader guy.
He's long gone
left.
From Microsoft. Yep. And then they also are killing the product Microsoft Reader. You know, which is what
which, you know
was
kind of
like their
though.
Ebook
right.
program.
That opens up a nice brand for that ebook.
It does. Yep,
so do you think it's in partnership with those guys across the street in Seattle, Amazon, or?
No.
I know it's probably not with Barnes &
Noble. Brandon Watson is at Amazon, right?
Right.
Brandon Watson's there, and his job is to bring the Kindle application cross-platform, including to Windows 8.
Oh.
That's part of his
job. Okay.
Yep. Which they've done. There's already a beta version.
So this
available.
Could simply mean you'll use your tablet as a reader because it'll have the Kindle app on it.
It could, but it seems odd they would call out reader.
Yeah, it's weird.
You know, it doesn't say portable game machine on a tablet. A lot of people use tablets just to play games.
True.
Yep. So it's a mystery. We don't really know. Paul, there is an app though on Windows 8 Consumer Preview that's a reader, but it's a PDF reader, right? It's not a reader like an e-reader.
There's actually a kind of a hidden feature in Word 15 that is it also reads PDFs now. The next version of Microsoft Word,
And it creates PDFs, right?
Yes, you can. Yeah, you can export the PDF. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Office 15 since you brought it up.
Okay.
What the heck is that mysterious tech preview build?
Didn't mean to, but...
You did. You started it, Paul. Is there a preview build? What is that?
Yeah, so Microsoft released a... I have it, yes. So there's a technical preview out in the wild with some of Microsoft's partners. And then in the summer, I think in June, probably with TechEd, they're going to release a public beta. The stuff that I've been looking at is just the desktop client, you know, the traditional suite, but there's new versions of Office 365 and the Office web apps, SharePoint, all this stuff. I mean, so everything's being revved in one big monstrous batch of new cookies for everybody. So it's very interesting. And there are some mysteries here as well. I mean, you know, the WOA tablets are going to come with some of these apps. Are they going to be the full-fledged apps or stripped-down versions? We don't know. We know that there's an Office Starter Edition today. I mean, will it be analogous to that? Not really clear. As Mary Jo asked here in the show notes, Office web apps, you know, hopefully dramatically improved, but I don't know. I haven't seen them personally, so I don't know.
Yeah, the only thing I do know about Office web apps with Office 15 is Microsoft's changing how people use those with SharePoint. So they're actually not going to host them off of SharePoint anymore. There's going to be a dedicated Office web app server. So that's something somewhat new that people will care about who care about SharePoint, that large and thriving community.
Yes. Yes. And I guess there's some kind of a My Office service coming, and I'm not really clear on what that is. I actually don't see it anywhere, so I'm not really sure what that means. But and then, of course, you know, one of the big things is, you know, how does this stuff work on the tablet? And one of the things I've done is on the Windows 8 tablet that I have, if you get rid of the taskbar and you switch around between apps, you run, you know, these apps full screen. I mean, they actually look like Metro-style apps. And switching between, say, Excel to Word to the start screen to, you know, the Metro version of IE, all between those four apps, very seamless. I mean, they seem like the same thing. And so you can kind of see where Microsoft has actually done a really good job so far of making an application suite that looks at home on a tablet and then also looks at home on a regular computer, you know, like the one I use, you know, the regular desktop that I use. You can open up all the ribbons, have everything displayed at the same time, and it's, you know, the same full-featured interface it ever was.
A lot of people ask, though, you know, I keep getting this question over and over, is Office 15 a Metro-style app? And the answer is no.
No,
desktop app that has Metro look and feel to it, but it's not a Metro-style app. It's not written to WinRT. It doesn't work like that. They didn't try to take that on. I think that would have been a huge job to completely rewrite the whole Office.
Yeah, but, you know, two things along those lines that would be very interesting, I think. I was doing a lot of the PC reset, PC refresh stuff in Windows 8 recently for the book and writing about it. And it occurred to me that I don't know how much work it would take, but it would be an incredible thing for Microsoft to provide an Office 15 and potentially offer to, you know, like tier one OEMs, like Adobe or whatever, the ability to have their Windows applications be included in that process. So that if you were to run PC refresh against your computer, Office would actually come back as part of it. I don't know how they're going to handle that on WOA because Office includes those applications. So apparently they are going to figure out a way to make that work for them. I mean, why not for everybody? I think that would be something really incredible. And when you combine that with the fact that they just kind of look like Metro apps, you know, it would make for a more seamless experience. But the other one concerns OneNote, and you were asking about rumors whether OneNote is going to be available as a Metro-style app. You know, OneNote is actually unique among the Office 15 apps in that by default on a tablet, it runs full screen with no ribbon, and it looks more like an immersive experience. And I don't know this for a fact, but just based on the fact that I don't see it in the build, I wouldn't be surprised to discover that those rumors are just based on that because it looks different. And I think it's just like the other apps. I mean, I don't know what the benefit to having OneNote as a Metro app would be because, frankly, the way they've engineered this version anyway, your notebooks are always in the cloud. So you're getting a lot of the benefit that, you know, like a new app that did that sort of functionality would have anyway. So I'm not really, I just don't get why they would do that for that one app, but.
Unless it was like a proof point, right? Like they want to show you, we are thinking about what a true Metro style version of our apps would look like. And here's an example is OneNote.
It's such a curious, I see what you're saying. But then why wouldn't OneNote be, or maybe it is, I actually don't remember. Is OneNote one of the apps that's included on WOA?
It is. And those are all desktop apps too, right? So, yeah. The other interesting little side note about OneNote 2 in Office 15 is, I don't know if you remember this, but when we saw the first leaks of Office 15, there was a mystery app that people were talking about that was codenamed Maria, that was supposed to be something like you could put all your multimedia information in one place. It almost looked like The Courier, you know, that kind of style of pulling all the different bits of information into one app where you could have them all accessible to you beyond what you can do in OneNote already. And from what I'm hearing now, it's looking increasingly like Maria is built into OneNote 15. It's not going to be its own app. And it's also going to let you cut and paste in Visio diagrams and all and Excel files, which I don't believe you can do right now in OneNote. So it sounds like that may not be a separate app like we thought it was going to be. And instead, it'll be a feature of OneNote 15 based on early tech preview feedback we're hearing.
Okay. When it goes silent like that, I just assume you want to move on.
Unless you want to ask any pithy questions.
I have
OneNote.
No pithy questions. I got OneNote, like OneNote, happy about OneNote. God bless OneNote.
All hail OneNote.
All hail OneNote.
The OneNote that rules us all.
I should sing, I should break out David Bowie's Ch-ch-ch-changes. The tech industry full of movement always. Yahoo fires everybody in their research division in New York City. Microsoft, Google, and Facebook snap them up like that. In fact, the Microsoft just got Yahoo's chief scientist. They have a great guy that they got from Yahoo. Was it Chi Lu for a search?
Yep.
And now who's this?
This is Raghu Ramakrishnan, who was chief scientist at Yahoo, now is going to be a tech fellow in the server and tools business at Microsoft. And it's really interesting what he's going to work on. He's going to work on integrating big data.
Oh, boy.
So it's probably some of the Hadoop stuff with server and SQL Server. So, yeah, he's on board already, and Microsoft announced that this week. That's a pretty big hire for them.
I think Yahoo's just decided they're going to be a content company and just not have any more researchers or programmers or anything. We're a magazine.
We're a magazine.
We're a magazine. What do we need a chief scientist for? We're a magazine now.
Of course, it's Yahoo, so they'll probably make it a print magazine.
They did. Remember Yahoo Internet Life? They had a print magazine.
Right. Yeah, totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Also, new head of marketing and advertising at Windows Phone. That must be a Paulie.
Who was the head of marketing and advertising before? Do you remember?
They've had so many
changes.
Kind of
a revolving door. Yeah.
Yeah, it has been. So the latest one was Achim Berg. Who was the head of Windows Phone marketing until, I think it was last December. So, yeah, he was the most recent one. And I'm looking for the guy's name.
Tom Grueler?
Tom Grueler, yes. Tom Grueler, who is the guy who was behind the Can You Hear Me Now?
Yes.
Advertising campaign.
I can hear you. You mean at Verizon?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, he's McCann. Oh, you know, he was a McCann Erickson.
McCann, right.
He was an ad guy. That was a good campaign. Will the nerd guy move over? Can you hear me now? Hey, I'm talking on a Windows phone. Can you hear me now?
Not on Verizon.
Yeah, no kidding. Isn't that interesting? There is no Windows phone. Yeah. Hello? Yeah. Can you...
There's one Verizon Windows phone, and maybe this guy will be the guy who can help unlock us to getting a second. Maybe.
He was also MasterCard Kohl's, according to Mary Jo's article on ZDNet, all about Microsoft.com. MasterCard Kohl's and Sony Ericsson. So he does have some phone experience.
MasterCard Cole sounds like a character on Game of Thrones.
MasterCard Cole, Lord Cole.
Exactly.
But Sony Ericsson, that's interesting. So he was a world group, so he was responsible for global marketing. And that is very important, obviously, to Microsoft.
Yes, they really need help on that front, as everybody knows all too well. So you know, it's like everyone's like, oh, great, that guy's got a big job ahead of him. Well, yeah, he does have a big job ahead of him, but at least this guy's got some telco chops. So that's a good sign.
And as you point out.
And he's an ad guy.
He's an ad guy.
He's an ad guy.
That's what they need. It's all about, slick advertising. Although I have to say the Windows Phone ads are among the best Microsoft's ever done.
But does anyone even know what they are? I mean, I agree with you. They've made some good.
I love them. But you should have said, really? Really?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's the tagline when the guy drops the phone into the urinal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, those are good.
But they're weird because they're saying, you guys are too interested in your phones. You really shouldn't be.
Yeah,
and that is
people
a strange
that aren't
message.
Interested in phones will love this.
Yeah, if you really don't care about your phone, if you don't want to be engaged with your phone,
I don't
phone,
give a crap about phones.
We got one
be a
for
Windows
you.
Phone.
So that maybe was the wrong message to send.
I hear you.
But I just thought they were clever. They were well made, and they certainly were grabbing. Better than the Bing ads, which just still make me think I've gone psychotic.
They're doing more of those Smoked by Windows Phone ads on the web, too, now. I don't know if you've seen those, Leah, where they've got a guy named Ben Rudolph, who's Ben the PC guy on Twitter. He goes around and he offers people $100 if their phone can beat Windows Phone and different kinds of challenges. And then they tape them. And it's like a lot of people who are just stunned when Windows Phone beats them, like posting to Facebook updating something on Twitter. So yeah, that's a good campaign, too, because
I
it's just like normal people.
One of the tasks they don't do is download and play the latest Angry Birds game.
Okay, here it is. Here it is. Watch.
Hey, I'm Ben. And today we're betting people $100 that Windows Phone is simply faster at the everyday stuff they do on their smartphones.
What kind of phone do you have?
I have the HTC Evo 3D.
I have Motorola Atrus, actually.
Motorola Atrus. That's a pretty good phone. You've got a Samsung Galaxy S2. Nick has a Galaxy Nexus, correct?
Wow, these are the top of the line.
Flagship phone of Google. Android phone, pretty good phone.
This is good. You know what I like about it? It speaks directly to people who care about phones.
Yep.
Strong words from our friend Justin. Why don't we do this? Why don't we try taking a picture?
Plus, it helps that this guy is an 80.
So why don't we look for someplace nearby?
Is an 80?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
And then we'll pull up.
He's a young guy.
Oh.
Ready, one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? He looks like a hipster.
He's got no hair, but it's because he shaves his head, so it's okay. It's a little too quick edited, so I didn't really get to see that it actually beat.
Well, I think we can assume they're not lying, Leo. But.
Sure we can.
Even Apple's ads are edited for time sequence or whatever they call it.
Boom. Done.
Yeah.
Posting to Facebook. I got you by a little bit.
That's good.
Wow, I haven't even put Twitter up yet.
All right, so I got Game Jumper. It's a 4-star restaurant.
Let me find Twitter in my home screen. What do you mean you're already done?
That's good. All right, those are good.
I have 127 apps on this phone.
Now, that's a YouTube campaign, though. It's not an ad campaign, obviously. It's way too long. Yeah. But I think that's the kind of thing, at least to reach our group, the geeks, that's what you need to do.
I like him. I like Ben Rudolph, so he's good.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just mad at Zappos, but I'm not going to talk about it. So go ahead.
What's wrong?
Just mad. I'm trying to buy some freaking shoes. And you remember Zappos got hacked, right?
Yeah.
And so they send emails out to everybody saying, you have to change your password. So I went and I tried to change my password. I have now been trying for 24 hours to buy shoes on Zappos, and I cannot get the password reset email. I've checked every spam filter. They won't send it to me. And it's like, this is supposed to be the famous company that cares about its customers, and they just lost one,
Wow.
Stupid.
This is why I shop at Ross.
Yeah, I'm going to Ross. Brand names for less, baby. Kohl's. That Tom Grunfungel, that's...
Oh, God.
So what we didn't say is this was the week that the Lumia 800 or 900, whatever it was, the new Monster phone came out.
Except that it didn't.
Oh.
It didn't.
What?
We know when it's coming, Leo.
What happened?
We don't know what happened. It was supposed to be March 18th.
It's supposed to be 4 days ago.
Yep.
And so, nothing?
According to a source who has been good in the past, but AT&T will have an announcement on Monday that will reveal the date, which is almost certainly going to be April 8th. And the price will, in fact, be $99, as we previously reported.
How much?
That's what's coming. $99.
What?
90,
When you're seeing the top of the line, like the Galaxy Note, sell for $300 with a 2 years contract, they're offering it for a mere $99.
Yes,
stunning.
That's what I've heard.
That would set the world on its head.
That was in that documentation we talked about months ago, whenever that was, December or January.
But I mean, this is AT&T. Remember now, AT&T is selling this Galaxy Note for $300 subsidized. You're saying, because I mean, tell you, there's a lot of people who will go in saying, "I want the Note." Wait a minute, $99 for the Lumia 900?
Well, it doesn't come with a pen.
Oh, gee.
So,
oh well, then forget it.
That's going to be $100 right there.
No, seriously, that's pretty spectacular. If they can do that price, that is the kind of thing we need. I don't know why we. It's not my team, but that's the kind of thing you need.
It is your team, Leo.
That's my team for this hour and a half. Seriously, that's the kind of thing Microsoft needs to get on the map here.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree.
And they also did launch Windows Phone in China and Brazil this week, though. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty huge. I mean, like, we're all talking about U.S., but I mean, those are the huge markets.
Yeah,
right?
Those are two big markets.
And by the way, huge to the tune of there will be more smartphones sold in China this year than in the United States.
Right. That's the first
time. Not just huge, secondary markets, the largest market
number
for smartphones.
Number one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Number one. Wow, that's great.
It's neat because they obviously they have to localize it for the language, and they have to remake apps and all that kind of stuff. But they also had to change a bunch of the integration. You know, Windows Phone has that great integration, which is why they're able to smoke those other phones, right? So you can integrate with Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and so forth. It turns out those services are not legal in China. So they actually changed the integration in Windows Phone to match the online services that people actually use in China. So it's not an American phone that you're going to use in China. It's a phone that has been localized for you, but also integrates with the services that matter to you as a user in that country. So they sound pretty cool. I don't think I'll ever have a chance to try one here in the United States, but I think it's neat what they've done. And certainly it took a while, but 15 months or so in to the Windows Phone phenomena, as I call it, they have phones for China. So that's cool.
Yeah, and Microsoft MVP from Brazil, Rodolfo Carmo, he was sending Paul and I photos from Brazil today of the launch of the Lumia 710 and the 900. And it looks pretty huge. I mean, it's on the front page of every newspaper. It's like all over the place there. So
smart.
We're just not used to seeing Windows Phone ads here in the U.S.
Well, do you think it's Nokia, though?
It is Nokia.
It is.
When you go to Europe, you see Nokia ads at every airport all over the place, everywhere.
Yep.
So it is clearly Nokia. They know how to market, though. I mean, and they're putting some energy. Now, I heard, though, that they were going to modify the UI.
Nokia was.
Yeah. Is that true?
There were rumors about that. But I believe that, there were screenshots, supposedly, but this is what it's going to look like or whatever.
Right.
And then someone had said that was part of their agreement with Microsoft. But I'm not really sure we're privy to all of the agreements. I just know that some of the enhancements that Nokia will work on for Windows Phone will make their way back to other OEMs. You know, they'll appear in the software, so anyone can use them. But of course, Nokia is going to do their own thing in some ways as well.
That's the question: is how much? I mean, a little customization, sure, but
yeah, I don't think they're going to let them replace the Metro home screen with something different, which is what I believe that those pictures were showing.
Very different.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think those were more like artist renderings and concepts by somebody who actually no longer works for Nokia, I believe. It was kind of like, here's some things you could do if you wanted to go this way, but I don't think you're going to see anything.
I like Metro, but you got to get rid of those squares. Could you do
that? Yeah, I don't like those squares.
You know? It's like, well, that's kind of the whole point of the Metro thing.
Finally, big news. Chrome outpaces Internet Explorer for the first time ever.
Maybe.
It depends.
And for only one day.
For one day, but one day.
Which is so bizarre.
I know. It was like this blip. So what happened?
It was really strange. I mean, Microsoft sent out something on Sunday. They alerted me via email about it. And they had a blog post where they questioned how StatCounter measures things. And they spelled out why. You know, the various reasons why this web analytics company maybe doesn't do things that it feels are accurate, you know, net applications being the other major one. It was kind of weird because it wasn't tied to anything. And then on Wednesday, StatCounter announced that for one day on Sunday, coincidentally or not, Chrome had more usage on the web than IE did. And the implication was that maybe people are using IE at work during the week, but when they come home, that when they can pick the browser they really want, you know, that's maybe the first indication we're seeing of that.
Right.
So I wrote a story about it, and I, and as I would, you know, as I do for these kinds of things, I don't state, you know, a story about Chrome being number one was incorrect. I you know, Microsoft says this is incorrect, but StatCounter actually contacted me, and they had their own little list of data, you know, so I actually ended up writing a second story about how they are fighting back against this argument. And they're defending the way that they gather data, of course, and explain some things. And they also point out some issues that Microsoft didn't raise, which they think are relevant to this discussion. But I don't know who to believe or you know, where the truth lies. But obviously, there's a trend occurring with web browsers where overall IE has been on a slow but fairly steady decline. IE 9, you know, the latest version on Windows 7 is doing very, very well, which is what Microsoft likes to focus on. But yeah, so there you go. I don't know. I can't, all I can do is present both sides and then I guess they can duke it out themselves.
Let's see. Let's take a little break. When we come back, you're going to do your tip, Paul. Mary Jo's got a code word of the week, an enterprise pick of the week. But before we do either of those, I think we should do an audible pick. Poor Paul. He's always you always have every week you give me a new audible pick and then we never have an audible ad, but we do have one today.
Oh, I see.
I'm very proud to say they Audible loves Paul because Paul, like me, is an Audible fanatic, and so when you hear an Audible ad for me or Paul, you're not you're hearing an honest endorsement of something we absolutely love. Audible, as you probably know, is the audio bookstore with over 100,000 titles. Pretty much everything. When it comes out now on a day and date of publishing, almost everybody now does an audiobook on audible.com. It's just, you know, it's huge. It's a big, important part. Baratunde's new book, when it came out, How to Be Black, Baratunde made sure that he had read it and it was out on this. You know, it's a great book, by the way, if you haven't read it. It was out and he had read it and it was available the same day the other versions were. That's how it works. You know, and such great stuff. Bestsellers, fiction and nonfiction, history. Ooh, The Secret Life of Marilyn Monroe. Actually, they have a whole list here. The Five Secret Lives, Secret Life of Pronouns, Secret Life of Bees, The Secret Life of Marilyn Monroe, The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, and The Secret Life, this is the one I'm going to get, of Dust. From Cosmos to the Kitchen Counter. but Paul has a better recommendation, and actually, I'm down with this one because I am a big John Le Carre fan.
Yeah, this is kind of an oldie but a goodie. We were talking before the show started about Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy, but because you know their movie was out recently over the winter, I think, and the movie is now available on iTunes and it's fantastic.
I'm watching it tonight. Tonight's my night, and there is a dramatized version of that, by the way, on Audible, which I'll have to listen to. Yeah.
So actually another dramatized version is what I'm going to be recommending today, which is The Russia House, another Cold War era spy novel by John Le Carre. Also full cast dramatization, probably by
the
same
group. It looks like they've done all of these. Yeah, it's called The Smiley Radio Play. So all this, the Smiley Saga is John Le Carre's series of books about Smiley, who of course is the hero of Tinker Tailor. So how are these? Because, you know, I've seen these and I'm wondering.
They're good. So the only problem is if, you know, The Russia House, like Tinker Tailor, was made into a movie, a major movie with famous actors and everything. So I tend to now think of those people as the characters.
Right.
In the case of The Russia House, it was Sean Connery and Michelle Pfeiffer are in it. It's a it's a favorite movie of mine. These are kind of slow boil stories. You know, they're not modern John Woo movie type things.
No, that's what I love about John Le Carre. They're subtle.
Yeah,
I
mean, and they're excellent. And words matter, and what people do. But you really have to pay attention. Yep. And so, what it is basically is a BBC radio dramatization with a full cast. It's not two or three people. It's a full cast of people.
Oh, that's neat.
It's just such a great story. It's a favorite of mine. The first time I read this, I was in Germany, and it was one of those share a book type deals at a bed and breakfast where you could leave a book and take a book. Yeah. I read this driving around Germany.
Beat up old paperback,
loved it. Just love it. And it's just an absolute
classic. There are three ways you could consume something like this. You could read the unabridged original with all the words. You could listen to this 3-hour and 11-minute adaptation from BBC Four, or you could watch the movie, which is the shortest of all. I'm going to have to do... let me listen. Can we listen?
You should do all three. You should do them in reverse order.
Exactly.
You know, in the case of good movies, in The Russia House and actually Tinker Tailor have both fallen in this category, that's a good start for the story. And if you like it, you can go read the book, and there's a lot more occurring there.
Nuance.
And it's a much more, much more complete story that you're going to get.
Let me play a little bit of this.
Make head or tail of them.
I think you should hand them over to someone who can.
Hmm? Really?
Definitely. I'd get them over to the Russia House pretty damn quick.
Oh, my Lord.
I love it.
So the reason that it's beautiful that the BBC does this is because they involve the spy agencies, primarily of the UK, but the United States factors into both of those books that we're talking about. But it's primarily about the UK, so it's appropriate somehow that these guys would all be British.
This is fantastic.
And it just makes it more of the correct feel, I guess.
So you can get this absolutely free. All you have to do is go to audible.com/windows. The gold account awaits you. That is a book a month, and your first credit is free. Most books are one credit. This one is. And it's yours to keep forever. You can cancel at any time, so you don't have to pay a penny if you don't want to. But I think you will. In fact, I have a feeling you're going to go through these like candy. I could see I'm going to get hooked on these dramatizations. The Looking Glass War, The Secret Pilgrim, The Perfect Spy, Tinker Tailor. Wow. And start with The Russia House. It's a BBC4 dramatization. If you like radio theater or theater of any kind, or if you like John Le Carré, this is a must. Audible.com/windows. And we thank them so much for their support. I do feel, I don't know, I have no inside information, but I was told by somebody who claimed to have inside information that this is the month that we will see an Audible app for Windows Phone.
Oh, I have it.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
So I wasn't...
It's coming soon, yes.
Yay! Is it like the iPhone or Android version?
It's a lot like it, I guess. Good. I mean, it obviously looks like a...
It's Metro. App.
It works very well. There's some missing bits. I mean, it doesn't do sped up audio playback, that kind of thing, but it looks
fantastic.
Very complete overall. Yeah, it looks good.
The nice thing is on these apps on the phones is you get the whole library. So you can say, because I have like 500 books in my library, so I could go back and, that's great. I'm so happy to hear that. Of course, all the devices, audible.com and now soon Windows Phone. Audible.com/windows. And now let's start with you, Paul Thurrott, and your tip of the week.
Yeah, my tip and pick this week are both based on some issues I had with Windows 8 recently. The tip, I'm not sure who to credit this with originally, but I read about it in laptopmag.com. I suspect they didn't originate it. But it turns out that you can boot directly to the desktop in Windows 8, sort of, and using the instructions they have here. I say sort of because the truth is the start screen loads, and then after a pause, the desktop loads. But, I mean, if what you're looking for is just going directly to the desktop, I think this is today about as close as you can get to that. There's been a lot of stuff online. You know, people are reacting in bad ways to the ways that Windows 8 works, you know, and there have been utilities and tips about, you know, adding the start button back and putting the old start menu back. I feel that moving to the desktop is a completely different type of thing. It's not, you know, replacing a feature with something else. Because ultimately, as I do every day, I boot into Windows 8, I log in, I hit the start screen, and I immediately hit the Windows key D for the desktop, and I go to the desktop because that's where I work in. Skipping that step where you go to the start screen, it's not replacing it. It's still there. I still use it for search. I still use it for all the other things that are related to the system level tasks. Whereas replacing the start screen with a start menu is replacing that thing. And that's not Windows 8. I mean, this is not obviating the point of Windows 8. It's just allowing it to be a little bit more efficient. So I feel like this is an okay thing for people to do. I mean, I think people who go to the effort to like download and install Windows 8 and then immediately get rid of the start screen are kind of, you know, it's kind of idiotic. But this type of thing to me is not just okay, but it helps you be more efficient on a desktop computer or a laptop, you know, where you're going to be on the desktop. So interesting. It does work. And that's kind of an interesting tip. So even if Microsoft doesn't add the policies, which I think they will eventually, to make this a little more seamless, we do have a way to skip by the start screen.
That's cool. That's nice. Yeah. So that's one is boot.
Yeah, the other one, the pick is for a tool called Unlocker. And this is a long-standing bug in Windows, and a lot of people who have written back to me are saying, you know, you should be blaming the application
writers. I recommend this. I've been recommending this for years.
Yeah, this is actually a really bad Windows bug, and it's been around forever. And yeah. I'm a little curious if Microsoft hasn't fixed it, but it basically involves this thing where you're working with some files, and now you want to archive them or move them somewhere or delete them or whatever you want to do, and it says, no, this thing's being in use by another program.
They're busy.
Now, depending on what you're doing, you might be able to figure out what it is. I know in my case, I work with a lot of images that I upload to my website. And when it doesn't let me move or delete an image file, it's because Photoshop is still running. Right. So if I close Photoshop, the lock is unleashed, or the lock is unlocked, I guess. And I can then delete, move, copy the file, whatever it is. This tool lets you do this immediately and without worrying about closing the applications and all that kind of stuff. Because sometimes, honestly, it takes me a little while sometimes to figure out what might be causing it. Chrome does this sometimes. Chrome is the application I use to actually upload the files. That's something that only has been happening in Windows 8. It wasn't an issue in Windows 7. I don't know if it's a Chrome update or Windows 8 that's doing it. It doesn't really matter to me, but you just kind of want to move on with life. So Unlocker is a neat little app. It's free. You got to be careful when you're downloading and installing it because, A, that website, it takes forever to figure out where to download it. And then when you do install it, you want to uncheck the things to install the toolbar and all that kind of junk. But the actual application itself works fantastically well and does exactly what you want it to do, which is unlock those files so you can do what you want it to do in the first place.
All right. Very cool.
And it works in Windows 8.
And it's been around for ages and ages. Yeah. And
As has the bug, yes.
As has the bug. And it comes up, I would say every 6 months on the radio show, somebody says, I can't. My files are busy. Reboot. I rebooted. It's still busy. Unlocker.
It has been the bane of my existence for as long as I've been doing what I do. Yeah.
I don't know how Unlocker works, but I guess it's just permissions bug or something.
It unlocks things, Leo. That's how it works.
It's magic. It's magic.
Yeah. I don't know, but it works.
And now we go to Mary Jo Foley for our Enterprise, much hotly awaited Enterprise pick of the week.
So I'm going to talk about something in SharePoint 15, since we talked about Office 15 earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, Leo, we talked about 2 or 3 weeks ago, there were some leaks about what's going to be in SharePoint 15. And we heard there might be some education app. There is, in fact, an education app we now know. And it's called Office for Education 15. It's an app that's going to be built on top of SharePoint 15. And I'm going to read you the little blurb about it that I know. It allows education institutions to manage, document, track, report, classroom and e-learning activity. It's for faculty and students to preview and collaborate on tasks, share documents, create websites for study groups and courses, etc. So basically they're taking SharePoint and saying, you know, why should we only have Office Client be something that's adapted for the student and academic market? Why not have something on the server side of Office for that market? And this is what's going to be coming, I believe, as part of SharePoint 15, probably built into SharePoint 15, or maybe it'll be a separate SKU. Not totally sure on that, but yeah. So there it is.
Very cool. And do you have a code name for us?
I do. Code name pick of the week is something I made my code name pick of the week months ago. It was called Lakeview. And at the time, I was told Lakeview was the code name for Silverlight on Xbox. And what's really funny and made me revisit this week is the codename Lakeview resurfaced again this week. Michael Gillett, who's a Microsoft enthusiast, found this. And Lakeview is listed as the codename for the BBC iPlayer that debuted this week for Xbox.
So there's an iPlayer for Xbox? Can I use it outside the BBC, outside of England?
It's for the UK market, I believe. I don't know if you can use it inside.
No, you can't. But you can't.
What's cool about it is it's free.
Got my hopes
it's
up.
Free for all Xbox users in the UK. So it's not just Xbox Gold Live Gold users who get that for free. But it's interesting to me that it's codenamed Lakeview because that makes me wonder, you know, was Lakeview always Silverlight for Xbox, or was it originally just going to be an app? Yeah. What's it all about? I wondered. I asked Michael, so does this mean this app is built on Silverlight? And he was looking into that. I don't think he ever found out.
I bet it is.
I bet it is.
Xbox supports Silverlight, right? Of course it does.
Yes.
Of course it does. If it didn't, nothing would work. Absolutely does. Very good. ladies and gentlemen, I think we've concluded this portion of our fabulous Windows Weekly show. Paul Thurrott writes for the Supersite for Windows. He is the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, also news editor for Windows IT Pro, an analyst with Penton Media, and the author of the fabulous Windows 7 Secrets, available in bookstores now. I left that out. You maybe should call this The Secret Life of Windows. Then you could be in that list, along with dust.
Windows is much like dust, Leo. It's everywhere.
It creeps under your windowsill.
Yep.
Windows 7 Secrets, and soon Windows 8 Secrets as well. He's a busy, busy guy working on it right now.
25% done.
October? Yeah. We're all in agreement now, October?
I don't know if we're all in agreement right now, but
that's the consensus.
Seems to be the,
Yeah. And of course, your book will come out exactly the same time. The day and date.
That's the hope.
Mary Jo Foley, she blogs like every 3 seconds at allaboutmicrosoft.com for ZDNet, and you'll find her great material there. It is really the backbone of this show, along with Paul's posts on Win Supersite. So if you could probably just skip this show, read their blogs, and you'd be set. All you'd be missing is my snark. So
it's the reason you're not the head of marketing at anything.
I'm too honest. No, you want the first of all, you want to watch live because it's always fun. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time at twit.tv. Make a note, next week we're moving to Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, because Paul's en route. What are you doing in Vegas?
Windows Connections. Ah. So I'll be there on Tuesday and Wednesday all day.
So we'll have a report from Windows Connections on Friday. You can also get the show anytime you miss it. We make audio and video available at twit.tv or subscribe in the Zune Marketplace or whatever it's called nowadays. What is it? Zune Music? Microsoft Music? Windows Music?
Don't even worry about it because it's going to be something different again. in another 2 months.
It's just fabulous on your Lumia 900, let me tell you. You can also get it everywhere. Elf podcasts are aggregated there. But do get the show. Please subscribe because that way you won't miss an episode. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. And we'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Remember, Friday, 1 o'clock.